Welcome to day 98 of my Everyday Bible. This is Rita Langland, your host from Hidden with Christ Ministries. Today we will begin the book of 1 Samuel. This book begins telling the story of the birth of the prophet Samuel, who would serve as the last of the judges in Israel. He was what we would call a prophet judge, whereas Samson, for example, was a warrior judge. And we will find in this book of 1 Samuel a transition from Israel as a theocracy where God was to be the king to the monarchy where there will be an actual human king. And the first king we will encounter, of course, is King Saul. And then later, King David. The book of 1 Samuel really portrays several things to us, which all point back to the reality that unless a person leans upon God, trusts in God, and wholly dedicates himself to God, regardless of the position in life that they receive, they will not be able to function in a godly way as a leader. We will encounter the priest Eli, whose leadership was pitiful as a priest or spiritual leader in Israel. His sons were corrupt, and his responsibility as a parent to restrain them was never undertaken, and therefore they were wicked and truly brought shame to the priesthood because of their vile behavior, which we'll hear about in a few chapters. And then we will see the introduction of King Saul, a man that was demanded by the people that they have a king so they can be like all the other nations. It was not God's will, but God gives in to the request of the people, and the results are disastrous for Israel. Though Saul starts out well, he eventually gives into his own carnal, fleshly desires and weaknesses, and he ends poorly. And then we will see the anointing of David to become king, and that story also begins here in the book of Samuel. So we're going to learn much about kingdom principles as illustrations for us in today's society as Christians in a New Testament culture. What are the kingdom principles we can take as examples from these Old Testament stories? There are so very many, but I believe you will enjoy listening to the book of 1 Samuel as it is full of stories of the lives of different men and how they respond to God or how they ignore the call of God upon their lives. So we'll begin today in 1 Samuel chapter 1, and we are reading from the Amplified Bible. 1 Samuel 1, starting at verse 1. There was a certain man of Ramathaim Zophim, of the hill country of Ephraim, named Elkanah, son of Jeroham, the son of Elihu, the son of Tohu, the son of Zuth, an Ephraimite. He had two wives, one named Hannah and the other Peninnah. Peninnah had children, but Hannah had none. This man went from his city year by year to worship and sacrifice to the Lord of hosts at Shiloh, where Hophni and Phinehas, the two sons of Eli, were the Lord's priests. When the day came that Elkanah sacrificed, he would give to Peninnah his wife and all her sons and daughters portions of the sacrificial meat. But to Hannah he gave a double portion, for he loved Hannah, but the Lord had given her no children. This embarrassed and grieved Hannah, and her rival provoked her greatly to vex her, because the Lord had left her childless. So it was, year after year, whenever Hannah went up to the Lord's house, Peninnah provoked her, so she wept and did not eat. Then Elkanah, her husband, said to her, "Hannah, why do you cry, and why do you not eat, and why are you grieving? Am I not more to you than 10 sons? So Hannah rose after they had eaten and drunk in Shiloh. Now Eli the priest was sitting on a seat beside a post of the temple tent of the Lord. And Hannah was in distress of soul, praying to the Lord and weeping bitterly. She vowed, saying, O Lord of hosts, if you will indeed look on the affliction of your handmaid and earnestly remember and not forget your handmaid, but will give me a son, I will give him to the Lord all his life. No razor shall touch his head. And as she continued praying before the Lord, Eli noticed her mouth. Hannah was speaking in her heart, only her lips moved, but her voice was not heard. So Eli thought she was drunk. Eli said to her, How long will you be intoxicated? Put wine away from you. But Hannah answered, No, my Lord, I am a woman of a sorrowful spirit. I have drunk neither wine nor strong drink, but I was pouring out my soul before the Lord. Regard not your handmaid as a wicked woman, for out of my great complaint and bitter provocation I have been speaking. Then Eli said, Go in peace, and may the God of Israel grant your petition which you have asked of him. Hannah said, Let your handmaid find grace in your sight. So she went her way and ate, her countenance no longer sad. The family rose early the next morning, worshipped before the Lord, and returned to their home in Ramah. Elkanah knew Hannah, his wife, and the Lord remembered her. Hannah became pregnant and in due time bore a son and named him Samuel, heard of God, because she said, I have asked him of the Lord. And Elkanah and all his household went up to offer to the Lord the yearly sacrifice and pay his vow. But Hannah did not go, for she said to her husband, I will not go until the child is weaned, and then I will bring him, that he may appear before the Lord and remain there as long as he lives. Elkanah, her husband, said to her, Do what seems best to you. Wait until you have weaned him. Only may the Lord establish his word. So Hannah remained and nursed her son until she weaned him. When she had weaned him, she took him with her, with a three-year-old bull, an ephah of flour, and a skin bottle of wine to pour over the burnt offering for a sweet odor, and brought Samuel to the Lord's house in Shiloh. The child was growing. Then they slew the bull and brought the child to Eli. Hannah said, O my Lord, as your soul lives, my Lord, I am the woman who stood by you here praying to the Lord. For this child I prayed, and the Lord has granted my petition made to him. Therefore I have given him to the Lord. As long as he lives, he is given to the Lord. And they worship the Lord there. Chapter 2. Hannah prayed and said, My heart exults and triumphs in the Lord. My horn, my strength, is lifted up in the Lord. My mouth is no longer silent, for it is opened wide over my enemies, because I rejoice in your salvation. There is none holy like the Lord. There is none besides you. There is no rock like our God. Talk no more so very proudly. Let not arrogance go forth from your mouth, for the Lord is a God of knowledge, and by him actions are weighed. The bows of the mighty are broken, and those who stumbled are girded with strength. Those who were full have hired themselves out for bread, but those who were hungry have ceased to hunger. The barren has borne seven, but she who has many children languishes and is forlorn. The Lord slays and makes alive. He brings down to Sheol and raises up. The Lord makes poor and makes rich. He brings low and he lifts up. He raises up the poor out of the dust and lifts up the needy from the ash heap to make them sit with nobles and inherit the throne of glory. For the pillars of the earth are the Lord's, and he has set the world upon them. He will guard the feet of his godly ones, but the wicked shall be silenced and perish in darkness, for by strength shall no man prevail. The adversaries of the Lord shall be broken to pieces. Against them will he thunder in heaven. The Lord will judge all peoples to the ends of the earth, and he will give strength to his king. and exalt the power of his anointed. Elkanah and his wife Hannah returned to Ramah to his house, but the child ministered to the Lord before Eli the priest. The sons of Eli were base and worthless. They did not know or regard the Lord. And the custom of the priests with the people was this. When any man offered sacrifice, the priest's servant came while the flesh was boiling with a flesh hook of three prongs in his hands, and he thrust it into the pan or kettle or cauldron or pot. All that the flesh hook brought up, the priest took for himself. So they did in Shiloh with all the Israelites who came there. Also, before they burned the fat, the priest's servant came and said to the man who sacrificed, "Give the priest meat to roast, for he will not accept boiled meat from you, but raw." And if the man said to him, "Let them burn the fat first, then you may take as much as you want," the priest's servant would say, "No, give it to me now, or I will take it by force." So the sin of the two young men was very great before the Lord, for they despised the offering of the Lord. But Samuel ministered before the Lord, a child, girded with a linen ephod. Moreover, his mother made him a little robe and brought it to him from year to year when she came up with her husband to offer the yearly sacrifice. And Eli would bless Elkanah and his wife and say, "May the Lord give you children by this woman for the gift she asked for and gave to the Lord." Then they would go down to their own home. And the Lord visited Hannah, so that she bore three sons and two daughters, and the child Samuel grew before the Lord. Now Eli was very old, and he heard all that his sons did to all Israel, and how they lay with the women who served at the door of the tent of meeting. And he said to them, "Why do you do such things? For I hear of your evil doings from all the people. No, my sons, it is no good report which I hear, the Lord's people spreading abroad. If one man wrongs another, God will mediate for him. But if a man wrongs the Lord, who shall intercede for him?" Yet they did not listen to their father, for it was the Lord's will to slay them. Now the boy Samuel grew and was in favor both with the Lord and with men. A man of God came to Eli and said to him, "Thus has the Lord said, I plainly revealed myself to the house of your father, forefather Aaron, when they were in Egypt in bondage to Pharaoh's house. Moreover, I selected him out of all the tribes of Israel to be my priest, to offer on the altar, to burn incense, to wear an ephod before me. And I gave from then on to the house of your father, forefather, all the offerings of the Israelites made by fire. Why then do you kick, trample upon, treat with contempt my sacrifice and my offering which I commanded, and honor your sons above me by fattening yourselves upon the choicest part of every offering of my people Israel? Therefore the Lord, the God of Israel, says, I did promise that your house and that of your father, forefather Aaron, should go in and out before me forever. But now the Lord says, be it far from me, for those who honor me, I will honor, and those who despise me shall be lightly esteemed. Behold, the time is coming when I will cut off your strength and the strength of your own father's house, that there shall not be an old man in your house. And you shall behold the distress of my house, even in all the prosperity which God will give Israel. And there shall not be an old man in your house forever. Yet I will not cut off from my altar every man of yours. Some shall survive to weep and mourn over the family's ruin. But all the increase of your house shall die in their best years. And what befalls your two sons, Hophni and Phinehas, shall be a sign to you. And one day they both shall die. And I will raise up for myself a faithful priest who shall do according to what is in my heart and mind. And I will build him a sure house, and he shall walk before my anointed forever. Everyone who is left in your house shall come crouching to him, for a piece of silver and a bit of bread, and say, put me, I pray you, into a priest's office so I may have a piece of bread. Chapter 3. Now the boy Samuel ministered to the Lord before Eli. The word of the Lord was rare and precious in those days. There was no frequent or widely spread vision. At that time, Eli, whose eyesight had dimmed so that he could not see, was lying down in his own place. The lamp of God had not yet gone out in the temple of the Lord where the ark of God was, and Samuel was lying down when the Lord called, Samuel. And he answered, here I am. He ran to Eli and said, here I am, for you called me. Eli said, I did not call you. Lie down again. So he went and lay down. And the Lord called again, Samuel. And Samuel arose and went to Eli and said, here am I. You did call me. Eli answered, I did not call my son. Lie down again. Now Samuel did not yet know the Lord, and the word of the Lord was not yet revealed to him. And the Lord called Samuel the third time, and he went to Eli and said, here I am, for you did call me. Then Eli perceived that the Lord was calling the boy. So Eli said to Samuel, go lie down, and if he calls you, you shall say, speak, Lord, for your servant is listening. So Samuel went and lay down in his place. And the Lord came and stood and called as at other times, Samuel, Samuel. Then Samuel answered, speak, Lord, for your servant is listening. The Lord told Samuel, behold, I am about to do a thing in Israel at which both ears of all who hear it shall tingle. On that day I will perform against Eli all that I have spoken concerning his house from beginning to end. And I now announce to him that I will judge and punish his house forever for the iniquity of which he knew, for his sons were bringing a curse upon themselves, blaspheming God, and he did not restrain them. Therefore I have sworn to the house of Eli that the iniquity of Eli's house shall not be atoned for or purged with sacrifice or offering forever. Samuel lay until morning. Then he opened the doors of the Lord's house, and he was afraid to tell the vision to Eli. But Eli called Samuel and said, Samuel, my son. And he answered, here I am. Eli said, what is it? He told you. Pray, do not hide it from me. May God do so to you, and more also if you hide anything from me of all that he said to you. And Samuel told him everything, hiding nothing. And Eli said, it is the Lord. Let him do what seems good to him. Samuel grew. The Lord was with him, and let none of his words fall to the ground. And all Israel from Dan to Beersheba knew that Samuel was established to be a prophet of the Lord. And the Lord continued to appear in Shiloh, for the Lord revealed himself to Samuel in Shiloh through the word of the Lord. This is the end of today's scripture reading. In the reading of today's Bible passages in these first three chapters of the book of 1 Samuel, we find Israel in a low state again, spiritually speaking. In chapter 3, it says, the word of the Lord was rare and precious in those days. There was no frequent or widely spread vision. And not only do we find that God's word isn't coming through clearly to anyone very often, but that the priest, the high priest, who's in charge of the tabernacle at Shiloh, has allowed his profligate sons, these two sons, Hophni and Phinehas, to serve at the tabernacle, but they basically spend their time being immoral with the women who gather at the gate of the temple, and then dishonoring the sacrifices that people who still had a heart for the Lord would bring, and taking whatever they desired or whatever meat they lusted after, and not honoring the very strict orders that God had given regarding the sacrifices and how the priests were to handle them and receive them from the people. And it said that it quite literally angered the Lord because they did not honor the sacrifices that the people brought. They would take the choicest meat of every offering for themselves. And they are described, these sons of Eli's are described as base and worthless. They did not know or regard the Lord. So this situation was so grievous to the Lord. It says that the sin of the two young men was very great before the Lord, for they despised the offering of the Lord. And it goes on to say that Eli did not restrain them. So you could say the sin was on his head as well. The responsibility for those sons, that he never disciplined them or restrained them when they were much younger, resulted in them becoming completely immoral, disrespectful, and that they didn't even know the Lord. So we find that the spiritual leaders of the nation at that time, which was Eli serving as high priest, was a man who was without self-restraint himself. And so it was a sad state that we find the children of Israel, or the nation of Israel, existing in at this time from a spiritual standpoint. But there was always a pocket, or you could say a remnant, of people who still loved and honored the Lord. And one of them was this man named Elkanah, who was actually a man who was a Levite. It's not clear from this chapter, but if you go to the book of 1 Chronicles in chapter 6, you see his genealogy, and we find out that Elkanah was actually a Levite, which means he's from the Levitical tribe. He could or should be serving in the temple, but for some reason he's not engaged in religious service at this time. But we find that he has a heart for the Lord, and he continued his regular attendance at the annual feasts that were held at the Tabernacle of Shiloh. He was a man of prayer, and as well as his wife Hannah. But we also see in Elkanah's life that he was a polygamist, meaning that he was married to more than one wife. And though the Mosaic Law did not specifically forbid this, we have seen through biblical narrative that polygamy, being married to more than one wife at the same time, never works out in actual practice. We saw this with Abraham when he took Hagar, the Egyptian maidservant of his wife Sarah, as a secondary wife in order to have a child with her. That was a disaster. It created great stress and strife between those two women. We saw it with Jacob when he was forced by Laban to marry both Leah and Rachel. He was actually tricked into that situation, and the result was strife between the two sisters. And then we see it here in the life of Elkanah. He had two wives, one named Hannah and the other named Peninnah. Peninnah had children, but Hannah had no children, and she became a tormentor to Hannah. The one who had the children was always harassing the one without, and tormenting her, and embarrassing her, and provoking her because she had no children. So we see that polygamy really never brings a blessing and never works out in actual practice. And so that's something that's demonstrated right here in the first chapter of 1 Samuel. But Elkanah was a man that honored God and loved God, so he would bring his family up each year to the annual sacrifice in Shiloh at the temple or tabernacle. So Hannah, his wife, was a woman of prayer, and we see that she goes into the temple to pray, and she's praying and really distressed because of her barrenness, and she's praying to the Lord and weeping bitterly. And while she is praying, though she's not praying out loud, she's moving her lips as she's praying from her heart, Eli the priest, who isn't the most spiritually perceptive man in the Bible, that's for sure, thinks that she's drunk and actually rebukes her. How long will you be intoxicated? Put wine away from you. Now, Hannah undoubtedly knew that Eli's sons were completely corrupt because it was clear to all of Israel that Eli's sons were ungodly men who would literally take the offerings right out of the flesh pot when people were making their offerings to the Lord, that they were sleeping with the women at the tabernacle gate. They were just corrupt and immoral young men. And no doubt Hannah knew that because that was widely known by the people of Israel. And she could have found this accusation by Eli to be quite hypocritical. He's going to rebuke her for drinking, which she was not guilty of course, while he allowed his sons to be completely immoral while they served at the tabernacle. But she did not respond in that way. She was respectful toward the office of high priest, which Eli held, and she answered him very humbly. She said, "No, my Lord, I'm a woman of a sorrowful spirit. I have drunk neither wine nor strong drink, but I was pouring out my soul before the Lord. Regard not your handmaid as a wicked woman, for out of my great complaint and bitter provocation I have been speaking." Eli backs down immediately, tells her to go in peace. May the God of Israel grant your petition, which you've asked of him. So she goes on her way, receives that as the word of the Lord that God's going to answer her petition, says she gets up and her countenance was no longer sad. I personally find this incident with Hannah and Eli to be very revealing of Hannah's character. She didn't respond angrily, bitterly, or she didn't even allow herself to be offended at this false accusation. She's weeping and mourning, and he's accusing her of being a drunk, but she doesn't become offended. Now, that's a word for us. How important it is for us to be very careful that we don't become offended when someone makes a false accusation or misrepresents what we say or do or misunderstands us. I've seen people become deeply offended because they were misunderstood. And this will only hurt the person who becomes offended. Eli didn't mean anything bad by it. He thought he was correcting her in something that would have been inappropriate if she had been drunk and in the tabernacle, obviously. He was just wrong. But he immediately changed his tune as soon as he realized he was wrong. But she could have gone away from there offended. And I guarantee you, had Hannah left there offended, stormed out of there, told him, "You have no perception, spiritual perception whatsoever. You think someone who's praying is a drunk." She could have accused him of being the worst priest ever. And she wouldn't have been far off if she had. But she did not. She maintained an attitude of honor and respect toward the priest, and she answered humbly, and the result was she was given a blessing because Eli immediately backed down after he realized he was wrong about what he said, and he instead said, "Go in peace, may the God of Israel grant your petition, which you have asked of him." She received that word as if it was the word of the Lord. And she took it to heart. She was going to get her answer. So she left in faith. Had she left offended, I guarantee you she would have never had that prayer answered. Because offense in your spirit will prevent you from receiving the blessing of God. We have to be a people who so quickly forgive, even if someone says something unkind or falsely accuses us or any type of offense of that nature toward us, we have to immediately forgive and forget so that we don't block the flow of God's blessing and grace to us. We have to extend grace, mercy, and forgiveness to every other person. It's just a requirement of walking in the fullness of God. If you want to receive the grace of God every day, walk in His mercy and His goodness, then you need to extend grace and mercy and goodness to other people, even when they are dead wrong about you. That is something Hannah did, which shows her godly character right here. And it says that in the process of time, in due time, she became pregnant and bore a son and named him Samuel, which means heard of God, because she said, I have asked him of the Lord. So here we see this godly family, this godly couple, Elkanah and Hannah, and they end up having a son named Samuel. And Hannah was so grateful to the Lord that she gave back the very thing she had asked for to the Lord. She waited until the child was weaned. He was probably about 3 years old when she finally brought him to the temple, to the Lord's house in Shiloh, and handed him over to Eli, which would have required a lot of faith if I was her to give her over to him. But she was really giving him to the Lord. And it was a gift that God honored, because this boy, Samuel, would end up becoming one of the most outstanding prophets in the Bible. He was the last judge, as I said earlier, prophetic judge, we can call him, in Israel. And he really guided Israel wisely and in the Spirit of God. So he became one of the most outstanding figures in the Bible, all because a godly mother prayed for this child and then surrendered him to the Lord. What a beautiful story this is. And the story continues because we see in chapter 3 how God teaches little Samuel, young Samuel, as a child to hear the voice of God. He was still a boy when this event happened that's recorded in Samuel chapter 3. And it speaks to me that God can speak to a child. God can teach a child how to hear his voice. This is something that you can teach your children and encourage your children, that even a young child can hear the voice of God. It says, now the boy Samuel ministered to the Lord before Eli, and the word of the Lord was rare and precious in those days. There was no frequent or widely spread vision, which gives us the setting or the time in which this occurred, that the word of the Lord was so rare. Eli was not a highly spiritual priest. His sons were completely corrupt and didn't even know God, and they're serving as priests in the tabernacle. But God brings a new priest, prophet priest, named Samuel, and teaches him. God himself taught him how to hear the voice of God. He calls to him in the night, Samuel. And the little boy gets up, thinking Eli's calling him, runs to Eli. Eli says, I didn't call you. Go lay down. He goes back. This happens 3 different times. On the 3rd time, Eli had enough spiritual perception to realize that it was God himself calling the boy. And so then he instructs young Samuel what to do when he hears the voice of God again. So when the 4th time comes and the Lord calls his name again, Samuel obeys Eli and says exactly what he was instructed to say. Speak, Lord, for your servant is listening. And this is a good word for us today. Do you want to hear the voice of God? Do you want to teach your children to hear the voice of God? Then spend time waiting in the presence of God and simply say, speak, Lord, for your servant is listening. And then wait upon the Lord. And when Samuel did this, the Lord began to reveal to Samuel for the very first time prophetic understanding of what was going to come to pass in a very short period of time regarding the house of Eli, which means his family, and specifically his 2 sons. Because the Lord told little Samuel that God himself was going to judge and punish his house forever because of the iniquity he knew about. For his sons were bringing a curse upon themselves, blaspheming God, and Eli did not restrain them. So God was saying that Eli was personally responsible because he never restrained his sons, even though he knew about their wicked behavior and what they were doing in the temple, and that they were blaspheming God by their behavior, their actions, their words, and they brought a curse upon themselves. So this was a very heavy word to be the very first word that the young prophet received from God. But he was faithful. And when Eli demanded that Samuel reveal to him what God said, the scripture tells us Samuel told him everything, hiding nothing. And that was the beginning of Samuel learning to hear the voice of God. And the last few verses are very interesting because it says, Samuel grew, the Lord was with him, and let none of his words fall to the ground. I love that verse because it means that God himself established what Samuel would say. In other words, God would tell him what to say, and when Samuel would speak that word out, God made sure what he said always came to pass. He let none of his words fall to the ground. In other words, whatever he said always materialized. It came to pass. Very powerful. And Samuel was established to be a prophet of the Lord, and all of Israel from Dan to Beersheba knew it. So this was absolutely the beginning of the prophetic career, you could say, of Samuel and his development as a leader for Israel. And he would be one of the most important spiritual leaders the nation would ever see. So we are beginning a very interesting period of Israel's history as we make our way through the book of 1 and 2 Samuel. I know that it will continue to be of great interest to you as the story goes on. But here we have been given, you could say, two extremes of parenting. Elkanah and Hannah. Hannah, a godly woman. Elkanah, a godly man. Hannah prayed for that son. Hannah dedicated that son to the service of God. His progression and growth and maturity in spiritual things and in relationship with God only went upward, you could say. On the other hand, we see the parenting of Eli, who never disciplined his children, never trained his children, never restrained his children when they did wickedly. And the result was they brought a curse upon themselves, they blasphemed God, they brought shame upon the whole priesthood because of their wicked behavior, and they didn't even know God, and they would dishonor and despise the offerings that people, out of a good heart and with piety and a good conscience, brought to the temple. They despised it and took it for themselves. So two extremes in parenting, one that was a godly parenting and the other that was ungodly, one that was bathed in prayer and the other one that was bathed in a loose, unrestrained, undisciplined raising of those two young men, Hophni and Phinehas. To me, these first chapters speak to the very serious call of God upon every parent's life, where we are called to raise up our children to honor and love God. That is a very serious call. I personally consider that the most important of all of the calling upon my own life was to raise up our son to know and to love God and to hear the voice of God. And that to me was a primary responsibility. And I would encourage you, if you're a parent, to take this so very seriously and to look at these two stories, or you could say these two families, and compare the results of their parenting. One that bathed their parenting in prayer, the other one that was just loose and unconcerned about their behavior and took no effort to restrain, to train, to discipline, or to even teach about the things of God. And the results of Eli's parenting were disastrous. The result of Hannah and Elkanah was a great blessing for a nation. Not only for themselves, for a nation. They raised up a young man, gave him to the Lord, and he ended up affecting a nation for generations because of his godly lifestyle. That's what God has called us to as parents as well. So consider that as you go through your week, the importance of your parenting responsibility. Be a prayerful parent as Hannah was, and God will guide you in your training and disciplining of your children. God bless you and give you a prosperous week.